Our second reading comes from the Gospel of Luke in the fourth chapter, starting in verse 16. When Jesus came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because she has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. She has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed on him. Then he began to say to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." All spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his mouth. They said, "Isn't this Joseph's son?" And he said to them, "Doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, 'Doctor, cure yourself,' and you will say, 'Do here also in your hometown the things that we have heard you did at Capernaum.'" And he said, "Truly I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown." My friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Truly I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. We meet Jesus this morning as he comes back to his hometown before beginning a faithful walk that begins at home and stretches to the ends of the earth. He will heal, he will exorcise demons, he will confront imperial power, he will suffer and doubt and wonder. His friends will desert him, he will die. And he will rise, he will send out disciples, and these disciples will share a story in which we find ourselves named and transformed. But first, home. First, he comes back home to his local synagogue, as was his custom, to a community that formed him and loved him into being, a community among whom he learned the faith of Israel, the stories of God's mighty calling on a people, the prayers and liturgies that help make sense of a violent and confounding world. Like most of us, home is where Jesus learns who he is, that is, a beloved child of God, and so he comes home. He has to come home first to sit among his neighbors, to hear holy words anew and afresh, as he has done throughout his life. He has to come home. But this time is different. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. The scroll of Isaiah is handed to Jesus, and he reads the text set before him, an oracle about the Spirit's intervention, the Spirit's call upon God's prophet to move through the world in radical, transformative ways. Bring good news to the poor. Proclaim release to the captives. Heal those who are not able to see. Liberate those bound by the chains of cruelty. This is a proper and prophetic call that Jesus claims. He proclaims to his neighbors and friends, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." Today, not tomorrow. Today, not next week. Today, not when I suffer on a Roman cross, not when I rise, not when I return, but today, today, today. The ancient promises of God, today. The long-standing hopes of a people, today. Liberation and grace and hope and salvation, today, for you, my friends, and for all people. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. The locals, Jesus' friends, and neighbors are ecstatic. After all, he is one of them. When they wonder aloud, "Is not this Joseph's son?" they do not denigrate Jesus as merely the son of a carpenter. but to claim him and his power. He is one of us. We saw him grow up. We knew him when he was this big. We knew him as a gangly, insecure teenager, and now he walks with the power of God among us, and he is one of us. If he has done so much for those in Capernaum, just imagine the bounty of God's provision soon to fall upon us here in Nazareth, because this Jesus, he is ours. He is one of us. But this is not to be. For truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. It sounds like a prediction, as if Jesus were gazing into the future. It sounds like Jesus uttering some mysterious saying as if he were a soothsayer. It sounds like augury or divination, as if he were a fortune teller. It sounds like prognostication, as if Jesus could peer into an uncertain future and see something the rest of us cannot. But Jesus here articulates an adage, not a prediction. It is not an enigma or a mystery or an oracle. It's a bare fact, a simple truth. The prophets among us, whether in antiquity or today, are rejected for their words, marginalized for their stances, turned away because of who they are. After all, what is a prophet? A prophet is someone called to speak those hard truths that we all know are true, that we all believe in our hearts, but refuse to embrace in everyday life. Prophets tell us hard truths that pierce our souls. With deep love and a sense of justice, prophets point out where we have gone astray, where we have missed God's call to love the stranger, to care for the marginalized, to advocate for the widow and the orphan, the migrant and the oppressed. And precisely because of how incisive and truthful their proclamations are, we shrink away from them. The truths they utter are too true, too difficult for us to embrace. And so we too reject the prophets among us. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. I think such a picture of prophets can also help us spot the false prophets among us, spot the kinds of prophets who lead us astray, those false prophets that utter words that tickle our ears, that point to the enemies we already suspected we had, that settle us into complacency and have us buy into hopelessness. Such false prophets tell us easy truths that feed our worst instincts: fear, resentment, grievance. Such false prophets tell us that they are not our friends, but threats, while at the same time whispering in my ear and in your ear, you know, you are not worthy either. If Jesus is right that no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown, then the false prophet will seemingly always find a welcome ear, a cheering crowd, a seat at places of power and influence. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. When I hear Jesus' searing, truthful adage, I think there are at least two vocations for us to consider, two responses we should keep in mind. First is to discern whether we might be called to be prophets, truth tellers that embrace the certainty of rejection. I suspect, however, that most of us are not called to be such prophets. It is a distinctive and difficult call. Prophets must have certain gifts that only the Spirit can empower. The prophetic road is often lonely and burdensome, and it cannot be chosen by us. The prophetic vocation is a call, and prophets don't get to be certain about the results, about victory, only about an unquestionable call from God. Now, to be clear, some of you are called to be prophets. And if the Spirit has called you to this holy task, there is very little you can do to flee from that call, as Jonah so vividly reminds us. So while it may be true that few of us are called to be vocational prophets, I think that nonetheless, all of us are called to prophetic moments when we articulate hard truths, when we stand in difficult places, when we embrace the rejected, and thus when we face the ire of those whose comfort we have disruptive. And here, once again, I hear Jesus' warning in my ear, because I know it's true that no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown, because I can recall those moments when I know I have fallen short, when I have opted for safety rather than truth, when I have chosen the easy path rather than the faithful one, when I regret that an opportunity to enflesh the good news of Jesus flitted by because of my fear, my comfort, even my inattention. And maybe some of those moments in your own life have been stirred in your heart. But my friends, I am not interested as a preacher in dwelling in those moments in order to inspire more regret in us. And I don't think Jesus is invested in our guilt either. Those moments when we have fallen short might just become moments of illumination and inspiration for us that next time we have the moment, that next time we have the occasion to embrace a prophetic moment. That next time you feel the truth of the gospel welling up inside you, may God's grace grant you clarity. That next time you see injustice, may God's grace grant you courage. That next time you sense that you must act, may God's grace grant you the kind of love that inspires action. But I wonder if a second vocation, a second response, might be even more common than the call to be a prophet, and maybe that much more challenging for us. That more common vocation may be to listen for, to look for, to believe the prophets among us today. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? But I remember Jesus' words echoing in my ears. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. So seek out the prophets of today. Listen to them. The call here is to buck that very human tendency to reject truth tellers among us. The call here is to notice when false prophets deceive us with easy lies rather than the prophet's hard truths. And I think the question for us as a community of faithfulness is how we can be formed, how we can help each other, how our imaginations can be shaped to embrace the prophets among us. How do we listen for God's grace and God's judgment alike in the words and acts of the prophets among us? I wonder if this weekend and the history it recollects are ripe for such theological reflection. In May 1961, Gallup surveyed Americans concerning the movement of freedom riders seeking to integrate bus service in the South and sit-ins at lunch counters seeking to do the same at restaurants. When asked if they approved or disapproved of what the freedom riders were doing, 22% approved, with a staggering 61% disapproving. When asked whether the sit-ins at lunch counters, freedom buses, and other acts of disobedience would hurt or help the possibility that black folks would be, quote, integrated in the South, was the language of the survey, a mere 28% thought these efforts were helpful, with 51% imagining that these acts we now valorize and teach our children as models of political change. 57% thought that these models, these ways of change, were hurting the underlying efforts toward equality. According to a review of Gallup surveys by the Pew Research Center, Martin Luther King himself was viewed favorably by 41% of Americans surveyed in May 1963, though only 16% viewed him highly favorably. King's favorability dropped by August 1966, when 63% of those surveyed viewed him unfavorably, including 44% who viewed him highly unfavorably. Now, how did King spend those years between these distinct results? In August 1963, the I Have a Dream speech. In December 1964, the Nobel Peace Prize. In March 1965, a march in Selma, Alabama to Montgomery after Bloody Sunday on March 7th. That is, King spent these years in actions we now celebrate, even as they were denigrated by so many in the moment. truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. Last spring, I visited Memphis with some good friends for the first time. Most striking was a visit to the Lorraine Motel where King was staying and where he was assassinated. The site is now the National Civil Rights Museum and includes the opportunity to walk through the room where King stayed. And this site has haunted me ever since. If you have visited, you may feel the same, or even if you have seen the famous picture taken as King's companions point toward the source of the deadly bullet, you may have this feeling stirring in you now. It haunts me because the Lorraine Motel is an old, old story, seemingly older than time. When God's prophets emerge, telling us hard truths we do not want to embrace but know are true, we reject them. And in this way, the Lorraine Motel and Golgotha are parts of a single story of this deeply human propensity to turn away from the possibilities of justice and grace, to reject a future more aligned with God's goodness. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. Jesus provides us one last bit of guidance here for us as we wonder how we might do otherwise. He reminds us of two stories of the prophets of the past that just might direct our prophetic vision today. Remember that his neighbors were enthralled by Jesus' proclamation, captured by the promise, and hoping to capture that promise locally. As Luke narrates, Jesus replies, "But the truth is, there were many widows in Israel in the time of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there's a severe famine over all the land. Yet Elijah was sent to none of them, except to a widow at Zarephath in Sidon. There were also many lepers in Israel in the time of the prophet Elisha, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian." Hearing these stories, the previously friendly crowd turns to rage, and former friends try to find a way to end this prophet's life. Why? Because they and we are confronted with the underlying truth to which the prophets return over and over. It's not just for you. It's not just for us. God's grace is always greater than we had previously imagined. God is always surprising us with the breadth of God's grace because our imagination for that grace is always stunted and limited and all too shriveled. It's not just for you. It's not just for me. Not just for us. This does not mean that God cares for them more than God cares for us, but it does mean that God's love for us cannot exhaust God's love. For that love always overflows the boundaries we have created, the fences we have tried to erect around our communities. Truly, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in the prophet's hometown. This is not a prediction. This is a bare fact, a truth that keeps coming to life around us. But my friends, I think it can be otherwise. It can be otherwise if we follow God's gracious gaze to the margins of this world, if we look beyond the familiar and the comfortable, if we move among former strangers who become friends. Because there we will find God's heart. There we will find Jesus, the truth-telling prophet. There we will find who we were always meant to be.